Welcome back to another episode of the Fusillade, an Arsenal podcast by the Short Fuse. I know it's been a while, so thank you once again for listening. This is Travis King. We have three guests for this episode that we are kind of recapping a little bit of the summer transfer window, the match, the 1-0 victory away at Newcastle, and then kind of any thoughts coming up here in regards to the Burnley match. So yeah, with us today, one of the regular guests here is Vic. Vic, how's it going this morning? Or this evening, excuse me?
It's going great this evening.
This evening, yes. You know,
this morning was terrible, but this evening, doing quite well right now.
No, it's been a long day for me, but... and then the second guest we have, I know he's appeared once, maybe twice before, but we have Heisenberg Camp from Arsenal Twitter. How are you doing this evening?
Doing very well. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. And then we have one more guest, kind of a special guest, someone I wanted to reach out to. I know he's been involved within the blog as far as commenting goes. Been a loyal reader, so thank you very much for that. But, you know, he also has been very active in his profession, and he's done something this week that he's done previously in the past that I've greatly admired, and definitely want to be able to talk to him and kind of get, you know, to know a little bit more about him. But if you follow him on Twitter, this is ZenPop. He's also goes by ZenPop on the blog commenting. But we have John Mavroudis with us today. John, how are you doing this evening?
Doing good.
Perfect.
Yeah, great, great. Proud to be here with you guys.
Excellent. Excellent. So yeah, we have a nice little cast tonight for the first episode of the season, which again, we are starting the season one match in, an away win at Newcastle. A pretty interesting 1-0 victory. Looked much like it was going to be the same as last year on the road. You know, not much of an attack really forming. We had a squad that was looked a lot like last year's. A lot of the new signings didn't feature until late. A lot of kids got some time as well again. But it was a win nonetheless. Great win by Arsenal as opposed to last year where we started out having to face Chelsea and City, dropping all 6 points and then having to find a way to counter that. We had 3 points in the bag the first match. So Drew, I just kind of want to talk to you real quickly. I know that you were very active during the match regarding how it was going, but just kind of give me your first impression about the thoughts that you have of this Arsenal team, which looked a lot like last year's, but kind of feels a little bit new this time.
Gotta say, Travis, they looked pretty wet this year. I think that was a big difference over last year, how soaked they were. It's really hard to take anything from that match because there were so many players missing from injury or from having gangs threaten your livelihood and your family's livelihoods that it's just like it's hard to take anything from it other than the fact that we got 3 points, which is about as good as you can hope for under those circumstances. I thought we looked fine. I thought we looked about as defensively sound as we have in a couple of years. but I also don't know that Newcastle was really challenging us too much. Just broad strokes. It seemed like Nelson looked like he could fit in. Willock looked fine. Maybe not great, but he didn't look like he was totally out of his depth like some youth players have in the past. I think Ainsley Maitland-Niles looked great. And of course, Abba is maybe the best striker in the league, and that should take us a long way. So, I mean, it's hard to come away with any sort of broad conclusion, but it was nice to not lose, I guess, is my takeaway from that match.
John, do you have any comments, any reaction first of the match?
Yeah, I was actually quite pleased because I think that what we saw was the worst possible lineup we will have this year. We're only going to be adding to the squad. We're only going to, you know, our starting lineup is going to be much, much better going forward when Unai has a lot more options on his plate and everybody's going to be a little more comfortable. So this was kind of a game that I thought we should have won, but you know, opening match, I'm having flashbacks for years of previous opening matches that just went horribly awry. So I could see this as being a stumbling block getting out of the gate, but I was quite pleased. And I agree with Drew that I thought our defense, I don't think I developed any new ulcers after watching this game defensively that I have in previous matches. I'm never comfortable watching our defense, and felt relatively good throughout the match. They didn't trouble us too much, but again, that could be the competition, but you play who you play. So yeah, quite pleased.
Perfect. And Marty, what did you glean from that? Anything unique that you saw?
Yeah, no, I feel like I don't want to just say ditto, because right. I feel like it's a bad podcast. So I feel like I should come in with a hot take and say we should sell
that's why you're here
immediately or something. But no, I basically agree. I mean, I do, you know, one thing I want to add is, you know, I thought Chambers had a really good match, which was you know, assuring, because obviously I think that's a big trouble spot for us. Is defensively, and who are going to be these pieces? How are we going to patch together a back line from what we have? So yeah, I mean, I thought defensively we were really good, and you know, frankly, I think that's a match that in a lot of past seasons we would have conceded a stupid goal and not taken 3 points from. Obviously, getting clean sheets, especially away, has not been the norm in the last couple of seasons. And so to get that was, I think, really big. To state the obvious, you can't lose if you don't concede. So and with our striker core, you know, I think we really do have guys in Aubameyang and Lacazette that can just steal a goal, pop up and steal a goal. So you know, if we can play solidly defensively away, and really, I mean, I didn't feel like Newcastle had a ton of chances. It wasn't like we were really, really under the gun. I thought we did play a pretty good match. And as Vic said, maybe that's because it was a rainy day in Newcastle and they seem kind of a mess right now. But I thought that was very encouraging. Like it is, you know, well, I agree. You can't read too much into it. I didn't think we looked great going forward, especially just moving the ball up the pitch. And yeah, a part of that's probably Ozil being out and having kind of a lot of young, untested guys in the middle of the pitch. But you know, that's definitely something we're going to have to sort of work on and piece together. And I'm not totally sold that Emery is the guy to do that. But you know, all in all, I think it was a very successful first week that you have to be happy with.
Yeah, there definitely was the attack that. That was being generated most of the match through the flanks, through Nacho, through Ainsley Maitland-Niles, and it's going to be one that's going to be to watch going forward with Arsenal, because as we start to get back those first team pieces and Hector Bellerin and new signing Kieran Tierney, it's going to be interesting to see how much they continue to attack through those flanks, but with greater success, because I mean, we're going to take those two guys over, no offense, Maitland-Niles and Nacho combo, right? So it's going to be interesting to see if that's going to be a trend going forward, maybe not as directly going down the wide areas of the pitch, but as you state, if the Ozil situation doesn't really clear up anytime soon, Emery's going to have to get creative in how he diversifies that attack a little bit more than what he showed versus Newcastle.
Yeah, and I think it's... I mean, I agree, and it's, on one hand, I don't want to give Emery the benefit of the doubt because we watched him attack in this method all last season, but Newcastle did set up with, like, a back five, basically, with, like, three defensive midfielders. So the center of the pitch was pretty packed, and you add that on top of a young Joe Willock, who's not quite as good at, you know, finding space in the center of the pitch like Ozil is, and it was just a recipe to kind of exaggerate the Emery ball that we saw last year, where everything was kind of almost exclusively going through the wings. So I will give this season a shot. I'll give Emery a shot this season to see if he can kind of add some more, add a few different tricks up our sleeve this season. You hope people like Ceballos, being a creative central player who's a little dribbly, you hope that he might add to that ability. We'll see if he is going to be like an Ozil replacement, or if he will ever like play with Ozil and play alongside Xhaka or Guendouzi or Torreira, whoever is also playing in central midfield. But it should be very interesting to see how that all shakes out. And we also need to obviously figure out how we're going to integrate the three of, you know, Abba, Laka, and Pepe. I think those three are going to start a lot of matches together just based on what we saw last year. So it'll be interesting to see how that's all integrated as players get fit and get back into the squad. And like Travis said, the two first choice fullbacks, whenever they make it back here in a couple of months, it'll be interesting to see how they're integrated back into the squad, especially since, Maitland-Niles didn't do much wrong yesterday and obviously created the goal. He's shown himself to be capable there, but have a few blunders. So it could be interesting to see what the decision is there. But Hector, if he comes back as fit as he was before, which is, always a concern with those knee injuries, I don't think there's much of a chance for Maitland-Niles to be anything but a backup at right back. So I don't know. We've got a lot of hope, and hopefully it does not disappoint.
Let me go over back to John. Now, I did introduce him earlier, and I forgot to go back into why we wanted to talk to John specifically, not only about Arsenal, but this art career that you have, John. I find it very fascinating, that just randomly it's like, oh, you're retweeting something. It's like, hey, I just did the cover for Time magazine, which I think is a huge achievement. And it's not the only magazine you've done covers for. You've done New Yorker, correct?
It's sort of like created the covers for the New Yorker. I've done that four or five times where I provided the idea and then they had somebody else do the actual illustration. So, and then I sold a cover, but they never printed it. So it's a frustrating and interesting experience with the New Yorker, but yeah. On the Time covers, this is my second Time cover. I've always been fairly political, and I like contributing ideas to those publications and see what flies. In this case, I live fairly close to Gilroy, where they had the mass shooting, mm-hmm. and I was really upset about that. And then going into the weekend, they had the mass shootings in El Paso and Dayton, Ohio. And then I just buckled down over the weekend and basically spent a lot of time trying to come up with concepts and sent them into Time. And Time got back to me on Sunday and said, they're art directors, so let's check in on Monday. And he said that the ideas I sent them, they liked, but they weren't sure if it was right for what Time was trying to do. And so they came up with a list of names and they wanted me. They'd seen my work before. They used me for what I call a typographic portrait. I do a lot of those where I use a lot of words to form a portrait of a person. And in this case, they wanted to kind of tell a story about all the mass shootings in America for just 2019. And I was originally given like a list of like 250 cities where there had been either four killed or wounded in a single event, not counting the shooter. And so I had to kind of format that along with their one directive was to have the word enough in there. And basically pulled an all-nighter and then 2 days later had to have it in their hands. And since that came out, I've been kind of overwhelmed with the response. It's been pretty incredible. I think it speaks to a larger issue that we have in this country. And you know, when there's like a mass shooting, we are all horrified and we all want, you know, to see, you know, what we can do. And we get upset about it. And then the event passes and then we go on to something else. And this is kind of a cover where we hope to kind of show the totality of what's been going on. And, you know, people have a tendency to look at a, you know, 250 city names on there and try to find their own city. And this cuts across red states, blue states, small towns, big cities. And so it's been quite a ride this week, to say the least.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
So what kind of led you into, like, would you define this type of art that you do like a specific style, or do you, like, how would you explain the art that you do to someone who has never seen your work before? I know you mentioned obviously the type of cover that you just did, but if you were to tell, you know, someone who's never seen that, what kind of art would you say that you do?
Yeah, I do all different kinds of art, but it seems to me that I'm being like, I'm sort of specializing in this one kind of art that I started doing probably close to, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago. I started doing what I call typographic portraits. And as an example, I did like Harvey Milk, a portrait of Harvey Milk with LGBTQ figures from throughout history that made up basically his face. I've done one of Donald Trump for The Nation magazine. I've done one, I'm trying to think, Hillary Clinton. I just did a piece on Joan Didion and the California writer, and her face is made up of all the different writers from throughout history from California. So I've described it before, like putting a jigsaw puzzle together using words. So I hand draw all the words. And I did this for the Time piece last year for Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, using her testimony in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And so we took bits of her testimony and I used that to kind of create her face. And it's interesting. I find it more interesting because you have not only a portrait of somebody, but you also, you can look a little bit closer and see words, phrases, names. And in this case, this week, places that sort of, that kind of speak to individuals or can find some way to relate to people. So, it's a painstaking process, but I think it's really effective.
If you were to make a portrait of Unai Emery, what would your top three words be?
That's pretty good. You know what the weird thing is? I don't know if I would do one for Unai just yet, but I just looked up the Arsenal marketing director and I really want to do one for Arsene Wenger, because I figure at some point they're going to have a tribute to him and bring him back. And, you know, I'm sure he's getting a statue outside the Emirates, and I really would want to take his entire reign. I don't mean to dodge your question about Unai, but but for Arsene, I've really thought about this and I really want to do it, where I use like significant players from throughout his entire reign and make his face up of, you know, Henri and Bergkamp, and, you know,
Pascal, just go Saigon.
To Zorla, huh?
Pascal Saigon.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I have to find some way to get in some, fun players who came and went in a flash, but
so can we commission you one for Arshavin or Bentner maybe?
That would be interesting. As long as you provide the list of names or words, that would be interesting. But I think both of them would appear on the Wenger portrait somewhere as well.
Absolutely.
I think you'd have to also, like, as a very, like, maybe the smallest font, it would be something to the effect of, I did not see that, or something like that.
Exactly, with all video reviews, exactly. I haven't seen the tape yet. Yeah.
Look, no, yeah, that's awesome, man. I find art very fascinating because I am absolute shit at it. So I always admire when someone is really good at that. So to not only have you be doing this, but then also, you know, be an Arsenal fan, that's double great. So yeah, I'm glad to have you here. And
thank you.
You know, definitely would like to have you back again in the future. So, I kind of want to take it back a little bit here. I know we talked about the match, but we just had the transfer window conclude last Thursday. And there was a lot of business being done, business that we didn't think that we would see from an Arsenal fan's perspective, given what happened in Baku and the subsequent rumors of the $45 million transfer budget. Real quickly, Marty, what was your take on that transfer window? Was there, again, I know that we've heard a million opinions on this, but was there anything that stood out for you that that you're going to take away from this window?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a little hard to say, I guess, until we see. I mean, candidly, I don't watch a lot of soccer outside of the Premier League, so there's a lot of these guys. I don't know how good Nicolas Pepe is. Everybody seems to think he's good, and it's very encouraging that we're still capable of getting that level of player. I mean, as you alluded to, it really the if you believed the rumors about the money available, it really sort of sounded like that was not the kind of player we would be competitive for. So, I think that was very encouraging. But I mean, overall, I think you'd have to say it seems like it was a pretty good window at this point. I mean, they certainly went out and seemed to address needs. I mean, I think again, it's hard to know exactly what actually transpired, but from what the credible media sources seem to be reporting, I mean, I think the negotiation with Tierney seemed to go pretty well, and that we kind of were interested in the player. Celtic really seemed to be trying to play hardball and get a much higher price, but I think we kind of negotiated them down to somewhat pretty reasonable. Similarly with, the Zaha saga, frankly, it sounded like Palace were asking for something pretty outlandish for him, and we were willing to walk away from the table. So, I mean, it seems like generally we were pretty sensible in trying to address needs. I mean, I'm still very concerned about the back line because, I do think we're coming off the back of two consecutive seasons that were, fairly disastrous defensively. And that was the big problem that I think needs to be addressed. And I don't think I'm not a huge David Luiz fan. I mean, I think if we needed to get another center back, and if he was all that was available, I think we got him for a pretty good price. But yeah, it definitely would have been nice to get somebody to shore up the defense. But I don't know that there was a lot of guys out there moving around that would have necessarily fulfilled that need. And if there wasn't a guy out there that the scouts and analytics people really believed in it. I would rather sort of wait a window or wait a year to get the right guy rather than just make a panic buy. So all in all, I think it was good. I think it was encouraging that we were bigger players financially than we were reported to be. And at least on paper, it looks like we got like a pretty good crop of new players that address a lot of needs, but not to me, not the most glaring need.
See, I'm the same way when it comes to the Louise purchase, but the way that I look at it and have justified it is it worth £8 million to ensure that Mustafi doesn't play? And it's one of those things where it's like I'm not a huge fan of him, but I certainly like him more than I like Mustafi in there. So for the £8 million, I look at that like is it worth it to keep him either on the bench or potentially gone before the end of this month? Yeah. So that's kind of where I've had to rationalize the purchase because I know a lot of people were happy from with the ball's feet he's gonna provide, and I think that's certainly true. But I kind of share the same defensive concerns that we've seen from him in the past.
Yeah, I don't
And
know.
when,
Go ahead, Mari.
well, just I was just gonna say, I mean, the one hope I mean, if Luiz is really capable, and I mean, I think he is, the strongest part of his game, I think, is being able to play the ball out from the back. I think maybe that may open up more time for Torreira to play actually, as opposed to Xhaka, because I think one of the issues we have right now is that we don't have center backs that really play it out well from the back, and so we need the quote unquote defensive midfielders who can do that, which I think has sort of sidelined Torreira more than I'm a pretty big fan of Torreira. So I think if Luiz can carry some of that, then maybe we can play Torreira more as like a pure defensive holding midfielder, and so weirdly maybe that will shore up the defense in the way that I want.
No, that's a great point. I think I was going to say something pretty similar, and I was going to start by saying that we've been playing out of the back for the past year plus with Emery, just focusing on that as a tactic, and we really have not been great at it, either because Petr Cech was starting and he can't pass the ball well, or should I say couldn't because he's retired now. And then even with Leno, it improved, but our center backs are still not good at it. We don't have a great passer. I mean, Koscielny's fine, but he was also, very hobbled last year coming back from an injury and being overused. So I am excited to see what that could potentially open up for us. And I think what you said, Marty, is correct, but it could open up not having to use Xhaka as much, because we really have, as much as, people don't like him and he, makes gaffes all the time, our progressive passing is just much worse without him, at this point. And maybe that can change to allow someone like Ceballos to come in and play with Torreira, who's another progressive passer who's very dribbly. Maybe that gives us a little more flexibility and makes us hopefully, a more exciting team to watch. Because if I have any complaint so far of the Emery era, it's that we just aren't fun to watch, even when we win. And some of those big matches are fun, no matter if we don't play particularly great football. But when you have however many matches against lower sides, lower opposition, and you just are grinding out wins against very terrible teams, the season is too long for that to stay interested in the squad, to be just honest. I think Luis would be great there. Ceballos, I think, is going to add a lot in midfield, just because he gives us something we really haven't had since Cazorla. He was a little loose when he first came on yesterday, but it kind of settled in. He will definitely also take all of the criticism that Aaron Ramsey received for crazy back heels. I think that was his first or second touch was
touch.
With some ridiculously audacious backheel to Xhaka,
I had to squint. I'm like, forward. That's number 8 for Arsenal doing a backheel to no one. I'm like, I love the guy, but the parallels were there right there at that moment.
Deja vu.
Maybe he was just doing some homage. That it was just he was citing prior artists in central midfield. But yeah, and Tierney, I guess we'll see what happens when he comes back healthy. Martinelli is fucking fast. He gets in good positions. He runs into the right channels. So I'm kind of excited
tall
about
as
that.
Shit. That he's an actual physical presence at 18. He's a big boy.
Yeah, I think he's more exciting than I kind of expected, I guess. I don't know. I mean, we don't really buy many Brazilian teenagers, and the ones that you can get are the ones that you can get if you're not Real Madrid or Barcelona tend to not be as exciting prospects. But
Don Raul running things, maybe we can be a little bit more scrupulous with our morals and ethics, like those two.
Well, those two, that and Edu, having the Brazilian connection definitely helps on that front. So, and then like Marty said, I've never seen Pepe before, except for maybe in a couple of highlights or maybe some sort of a European match. But everyone seems pretty excited to him, even if I think the only criticism I've seen is that we overpaid, which, whatever, I don't care too much about that. So, I don't know, I'm excited, and it'll also be interesting to see who we dump here in the next couple weeks, because I think there's some promising options there as well.
I think everybody has their mindset on one particular person, but
let's all say it on the count of three. One, two, three.
Mustafi. Yeah, on the Mustafi angle, I understand, and I think you guys are right that David Luiz's best asset is being able to control the ball and get it forward. But from what I understand and from what I've seen, he's also pretty good at cleaning up garbage. And maybe that's exclusively when they're playing a back three. But and he's not someone to put your trust in if he's just on, you know, the defensive end of the game. But if he's covering for people, that's quite a concern with our defense. So that could help as well. And I think that Saliba signing is pretty promising going into the future as well. After all that drama, finally getting that across the line gives me a lot of hope for the future as well, that we're serious about targeting youngsters who can come through the ranks, because I've heard nothing but great things about him as well.
Speaking of exits, Marty, you're our journalist on the ground in the DMV area. Are you, buying coffee shop stock in DC?
I feel that's going to be such a disaster. It's the worst possible place for a coffee shop. I was there last night for the LA Galaxy match, and yeah, it's I don't know. I love Mesut Ozil. I would love it if he came to DC United. Even though I'm not sure he'd be a great fit, but I don't know. I'm very skeptical that it's going to happen before the end of his current contract, unless Arsenal are willing to A, let him go for no transfer fee, and B, willing to pick up a good 2/3 or 3/4 of his salary, because I think he's on such heavy wages that he's nowhere anywhere. Yeah, I mean, it would be much, much, much more money than DC United are currently paying Wayne Rooney, who I think is a much bigger sort of box office draw to casual fans than Ozil is. So I don't know. I'm trying not to sort of get my hopes up, because I think it would be a lot of fun, but it's hard for me to see it happening. So I don't know, especially after his coffee shop goes under in 2 to 3 months. I feel like that might actually sour him on the entire prospect of coming to Washington, D.C. But we'll see.
That just means you have to go to the coffee shop more often to keep it, open. It just means you have to visit more.
Yeah, I know. Doing my part. Go all the way down to the Southwest waterfront to get coffee every day.
Hence the Chinese Super League prayers, too.
Well, I was just going to say, I can't believe Stephen Goff tweeted that DC United think it's like a 1 in 4 chance.
1 in 4.
Like that. Like that's, and for some reason that didn't, and maybe I fell asleep and didn't go back and read that, but that didn't go viral on Arsenal Twitter. And I was kind of floored when I saw that, because that's like Marty said, all of the facts seem to say that this is not happening probably for 2 years.
We're a bunch of cynics.
Yeah.
Well, the fact that this story has gone on now for quite a while, longer than I anticipated when I first heard it, and then to hear, as you said, Stephen Goff, who is very Ornstein-like in the way that he reports things going on in and around the D.C. area, but the fact that this story hasn't gone away makes me think that there is something there. It makes me think that they are kind of working things out. That it's not just this weird rumor that floated out and that you would normally see batted down by someone within either camp. And so the fact that it still kind of persists makes me think that someone's getting creative here.
And just to piggyback, regardless of whether the Ozil to DC thing happens, which again, I'm still very skeptical of, as you say, I mean, Goff is a really good reporter, absolutely does not sort of fabricate stuff. So if he's reporting this stuff, he's getting it from his sources with DC United. So I'm 100% sure these talks are taking place. And, just the fact that the talks are taking place, I think is a really clear signal that Ozil wants out, or Arsenal wants him out. I mean, it's, this is not the kind of thing that happens when all is going well in the relationship between a player and club. And so if nothing else, it's whether it happens or not this window or in January, I think it's really worrying in the sense that, obviously on top of all these other, very serious personal and security issues he's having to deal with right now. I mean, I think you'd have to be worried just from a soccer perspective that his head is not really with Arsenal right now. And so, as much as I love the guy, and as much as I think when he plays well, he fixes a lot of the problems we were talking about you know, creating chances and moving the ball up the pitch, you do sort of have to wonder, like, how much are we going to get from him this season? Is he going to sort of, can he regain his focus and really be a big contributor to the season? I think it's a big question mark.
No, that's a good point. And he played so well in the preseason, I thought, I was kind of getting my hopes back up. So it would be a little disappointing if something were to happen on that front, but I think it's pretty unlikely to happen this year. And I hope it doesn't, just for the mere fact that I think we saw it yesterday, and I don't know that this would change too much going forward. I mean, who knows, maybe Ceballos is a lot better than I thought, but selling Ozil, we need to buy someone to replace him. So we can't obviously do that until January, and that market's always kind of depressed. So it'll be interesting to see what would happen on that front if he left. And I think, you know, what should happen is that we should just go sign Christian Eriksen, isn't he, on a free in the summer?
Oh, seeing it again. I'm curious what you guys think. We were just talking about the transfer budget. With the selling of Iwobi, did those numbers end up that Ornstein and everybody were bantering about, did those end up being pretty close to accurate? I mean, if it was, I think that's a hell of a job by Arsenal to get that kind of haul for that kind of budget, finding a creative way to get that many players in, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how the Iwobi deal was structured, which it seems to be now a new thing that people report on with transfers as opposed to just fees, which is probably for the best. If you have that transparency to see how they're breaking it down, all the better. But that said, I haven't seen exactly how that's been structured yet with Iwobi yet. Maybe there's news and I just haven't seen it, but I think that a lot of the moves that we made this year were... we were basically putting a down payment on these players and then kicking right. the rest of it out through some sort of structured plan with them. So that said, it's hard to say, but if you look at it from just, I think the fee standpoint, getting that money for Iwobi and being able to apply that somewhat in part to the rest of the other players, given that we already had that 45, if you want to say that that's all we had, which again, I think is highly, highly unlikely at this point. Yeah, it's not bad business. It's really good business, actually.
Isn't this the first transfer window that we've gone into where we didn't have a quote-unquote war chest? I mean, where they were downplaying the amount, and now you can negotiate not from like, oh, we're swimming in money and everybody's going to be jacking up the prices, but saying we have this much, yeah. At least approaching it in a more thoughtful, poker-ish kind of way.
Kind of playing possum.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I imagine by the end of the window, I mean, we're hearing pretty heavy rumors that Elneny is probably going to go. He's going to get a little bit of a fee, you know, Mustafi, maybe not. I imagine that someone will write the piece after all is said and done that does some sort of creative math to get us around that 45 million mark. But I don't think we exceeded it too much. I would say I think we're a little bit over that, but not. But it wasn't like we said 45 and we did like some like $100 million with sales net spend, as we love to talk about. So yeah, it was. We did a good job there. I mean, it did suck to lose a Iwobi, but I mean that somebody had to go, and unfortunately, he was the most attractive option. I mean, we're not getting off of Ozil or Mkhitaryan anytime soon. Although I was really hoping someone in the Chinese Super League was going to look at Dortmund's, like, you know, 2013-14 stats or something and see Mkhitaryan's goals and assists right in the Bundesliga and, you know, take him off our hands. But alas, we had to move on our most sellable asset.
Yeah, you get a couple of nice moments with Mkhitaryan, but the rest of it is just not fun to watch. It was not a good performance this week. Of course, he had a couple of moments that led to some probably our best chance in the first half, and and made some interesting plays in the second half, but a lot of it was just really tough to watch.
Yeah, he seemed like he was on a different page from everyone other than, like, Aubameyang. And like you said, the first half, I think our best chance was probably that ball he chipped to Aubameyang for his left-footed attempt that he fired at the goalkeeper. But they do have, like, they do have a bond from their long experience playing with each other that is fun to watch when it works out. But, yeah, the rest of his performance tends to be quite frustrating, and he definitely does not have that connection with literally anyone else on the team. And I also think he needs to reconsider how athletic Nacho Monreal is, because it seemed like he thought he was trying to pass it to a spry fullback out on the left a couple times, and Nacho was just kind of like, what the fuck, man? I can't.
It was hilarious watching the two interact. It was like two old ladies bitching at each other. I think there were like three or four times in the first half where they were making gestures at each other. It was fantastic. I mean, from a comedy standpoint, you know that we're not going to count on these two, hopefully, for much of the season. So while they're out there, might as well just see some sort of entertainment like that. So the one thing I want to also bring up in regards to the window, and it's something that Amy Lawrence wrote about today and on The Athletic, who I believe to this point they do not employ Neil Custis yet, but you know I'm sure he'll let us know the day that he does get employed by The Athletic. So the one thing she pointed out was that the one presence throughout this entire squad since he's arrived has been Edu. He's been involved. He's been at training sessions every day, standing, watching the players. He's obviously kind of overseen a lot of the activities since he showed up from the Brazilian national team. He seems to kind of have this very hands-on approach that he's taking in managing this club with the assistance of, obviously, Unai Emery and others. The reason I bring this up is that at Arsenal, we really haven't seen this kind of figure before, this hands-on who wasn't the coach, because you know, again, Arsene Wenger was playing many different instruments in the latter half of his career at Arsenal once David Dean left. So he was kind of all those people at the same time. And, you know, as cute as it was for a long time, obviously there were deficiencies in that process. And then when Ivan Gazidis showed up, he didn't seem to have that same sort of presence, or at least it hasn't been reported that he was as involved as Edu has been the last month and so in change. So do you expect there to be more accountability from the management staff, such as Edu, Sunleahy, given this outlay, given the fact that they seem to be much more hands-on than Sunleahy was last year in Unai Emery's first season?
I mean, I will take a wildly uninformed stab at that.
That's the expectation that I have.
Those are the best opinions.
I figured you wouldn't have had me on the podcast if you wanted somebody who knew what they were talking about. So
No. Experts need not apply.
Just to take a step back, I mean, I think this is part of, in some ways, a continuation of like what we saw last season, which is, you know, Wenger, for as much as we all love him, I love him more than anybody. I think the structure had become very sort of calcified and very, he was in charge of everything, but the way modern football has developed, at that level, had sort of passed him by in a way that there were too many moving pieces for one person to keep track of. And he just, he had not really delegated that stuff in any effective way. And I think that's a big part of the reason Arsenal had sort of had this sort of slow, gradual decline over the course of a decade or so. And I mean, give him all the credit in the world for keeping us afloat while the debt from the Emirates Stadium was being paid off. But you know, I think it was sort of time to, whether it was time for him to go or not, like, I think it probably was, but at the very least, it was a time for like a dramatic shift in the model that Arsenal used. And, you know, I think him going was part of that, but it did leave this big power vacuum. And we've sort of seen this sort of Game of Thrones like situation play out where Gazidis gets beheaded or whatever, you know, whatever the Game of Thrones analogy is. Gazidis goes, Sven goes, you know, all these guys who had sort of come in to play certain roles either weren't happy with the way things were being run or they were being forced out. And so now we see Raul sort of seems to be much more powerful this season than he was last season. We see Adu come in. And all of this is a very long-winded way of saying, you know, I don't really know because I'm not totally sure who's doing what or how accountable people are to what. But obviously there was a significant shift when they brought in Emery and gave him this sort of thing. I tease him all the time, but this is a very significant thing that he was not the manager. He was the head coach. And that was a very clear sort of sign and signal that, you know, he was going to have much less authority over things like transfers and training and a lot of these roster structure than other people in the club were, and certainly less power over those elements than Wenger was. So, you know, Adu seems impressive. Obviously he's a guy with a storied history at Arsenal, and you know, everything I've read that he said or about him seems like he's very on top of this stuff and dedicated, but you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, whether he and Raul have sort of clearly defined roles or whether there's going to be some friction there or between them and Emery. It really wouldn't surprise me if we saw somebody leave at the end of the season or sometime during the season again, because I think everything, at least from my outsider's perspective, again, completely uninformed, is that everything seems to be very fluid and very in flux, and it's not totally clear who is taking over which of these responsibilities that Wenger used to have complete control over. So, you know, I think it's encouraging. I think Adu seems like the kind of guy we should have in that kind of role. And the fact that he wants to be so hands-on, I think is a good sign, but you know, it's just hard to know until everything kind of settles in a little bit and we figure out sort of exactly who's in charge of what.
Don't you think the fact that it's Emery in charge, at least on the field, and among the players, I feel a little bit more comfortable because I think, you know, I just don't see Wenger accepting any of that. And I see Emery is sort of, more go along to get along in the aspect of working with upper management, but, I could be wrong. That's just my initial impression.
No, I agree with that. And I think that was one of the reasons he was hired, was because he had come from PSG, where he had a background where his responsibilities really were very limited to sort of, you know, match day, basically. You know, I mean, he really sort of came in and did the match day tactics and talked to the players and ran training. But, you know, all the front office boardroom stuff was not something he was involved in. And I think, again, coming off this Wenger model, I think it was a conscious decision by the people who were doing the hiring, by the board, by the Kroenkes, to bring in somebody that they knew wasn't going to try to sort of replicate the level of sort of power and authority over every aspect of running the club that Wenger had.
Yeah, we're mixing movies, but yeah, the silent Mordor behind the Mordor Mountain, Kroenke Mountain, whatever.
Stan's eye. Yeah, I think, I guess I feel like the subtext of your question, Travis, to start this discussion was, do we think that Adu being more hands-on means Emery has more or less time at the club?
Correct. Yes.
Glad I can. I did decently in English in college, so I tried to pick up on, you know.
Well, we've had also enough conversations.
So. How dare you bring it back to the question?
No, you guys did very well. I never thought about that, the way that you guys approached that. So, but yes, Drew.
Well, no, I think if I can borrow from, like, you know, American sports analogies, as an American soccer fan will always do. I mean, Adu is basically like a GM, and Emery was not his hire. And we see this a lot in American sports where the GM comes and the head coach, if he even just does okay, gets the boot because he's not his guy. He's not Adu's guy. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, like, how long of a leash does he have? He's in basically the last year of his contract. I know there's an option that we can exercise, I believe, is the report that's been out there on the length of his contract. So I don't know. I mean, I think he has to come through. And I'm not really sure if Adu is going to be a results guy, where if we like win a cup and get fourth, even if we don't look that much better, just because, you know, Chelsea and Man U could very easily be shit shows this year. I don't know if that keeps his job for next season. It probably does, but
yeah, I would think it would, but I was curious. Yeah. What your opinion was of that? We make top four. You think he could still be gone?
I don't know. Like, I mean, we very easily could have been top four last year, you know, if we had played a
one game.
Side. Yeah, if we had played a decent penalty. Side against Crystal Palace.
One penalty.
So, I mean, there's like a very plausible reality where we're not any better than last year and we could get fourth because Chelsea, for whatever reason, decided to fire their very good manager and hire somebody who's probably not a good manager, and also sell their best player and replace him with a very good young player, but one who's, you know, still figuring things out. So, and then obviously Man U is whatever they are. So I don't know. I would like to think that if he somehow backs into fourth, that's not an automatic job saver, but maybe it is. But I definitely think if he doesn't get us back in the Champions League, that contract is not getting extended.
Okay, if we win the Premier League, do you think Emery stays? No, I'm just kidding.
Look, if we win the Premier League, I don't care. Like, I don't care if our XG was actually like negative 20 on the season. Like, I would re-up Emery, like 10-year contract. Forget about underlying numbers.
I don't know if I'd go that far. No, it is going to be interesting because, I mean, there's obviously been this huge shift towards bringing guys in from the standpoint that you now have the fingerprints, and I'm going to butcher his name, but the agent, Kia Jarabshian, I think that's how you pronounce it. The agent of Adu, the agent of David Luiz, who kind of seems to have a little bit more involvement in the club versus hardly having any involvement whatsoever when Arsene Wenger was there. But just kind of seeing how he also kind of behind the scenes helps shape how this club ends up looking is going to be very interesting to me.
Yeah, he has the Rolodex, right? Isn't that what we're all interested in, his names, or he's the agent?
Oh, that's Raul's Rolodex. But then, yeah. You take Kia's, and I imagine that's pretty much everyone in the entire sport.
Yep.
So before we leave here, I know that we have a match coming up this weekend versus Burnley. Again, they're up, you know, they have 3 points based on a 3-0 win versus Southampton. It is at home, so it's a home opener for Arsenal this year. Kind of want to get just your thoughts on how you see this game going. Is anything that you're looking for in terms of players coming back into the starting rotation? What's the things that you're going to be looking for from this match from an Arsenal standpoint?
I think the number one thing I'm going to be looking for is, you know, Mike Dean is the ref, and Twitter tells me that we've never won a match. I don't think any team has ever won a match when Mike Dean is referee, so. You know, it'll be interesting to see if we can, you know, conquer these unbeatable odds. But no, on a more serious note, I really hope Pepe gets, you know, his first start. I hope Ozil and Kolasinac are back, because I want us to, you know, really, really attack and go at Burnley, because I love beating the shit out of them and seeing Sean Dyche get very, very, very angry. I hope, you know, there's like a controversial penalty. Those are very enjoyable against Burnley.
Like an extra time, yeah.
Yeah, hopefully.
Very much so.
Preferably like a minute after the actual extra time that was given by the referee. I mean, I want it to be like as terrible as possible for them. So Pepe, I guess, would be the one thing that I just really want to see. Like, we were in shutdown, 1-0 up. We're not going to really play mode. Whenever he came on last time, we had like one or two promising attacks that he was involved in. So I just really want to see him, you know, get at least like 70, 75 minutes, and see what he can do in a match where we should be able to dominate possession and hopefully create some chances. So that would be my hope for this weekend.
Yeah, I largely agree with that. I mean, I do think one really interesting storyline this season, I think, is just going to be how Emery fits in Pepe, Lacazette, and Aubameyang together. I mean, it seems like you have to start at least two of them. But it'll be interesting to see sort of who is starting, what roles they play. You know, I'll be interested to see sort of what happens this week, whether that gives us any insight into how that's going to work going forward. But yeah, like Drew said, I mean, I think it's hard to ding the club too much for not creating many chances this past week, because it's a rainy day, it's away, it's in Newcastle. You've got a lot of players like Pepe who just joined the club, Ceballos, that you can't really expect to sort of hit the ground running. But now, you know, a weekend at home, against a, you know, lower half side, and hopefully, you know, the weather is still relatively nice in August. You know, it really seems like there shouldn't be too many excuses for not getting the ball up the pitch and creating chances. And so, you know, I think this will be a much better test and be a much better sort of signal as to where our sort of attack is right now.
Yeah, this looks like one of those classic trap games. I still think we can, you know, we're going to get a result, but I would echo the sentiment. I'm looking forward to seeing more of what Pepe can do and what Ceballos can do. And I'm also, this was brought up in the beginning of the podcast, but I would join you guys in saying I was impressed with Chambers. And if he can remain this kind of steady influence on our defense, you know, it's not that I think we're going to get some major challenge offensively from Burnley, but I think that this will just add to growing confidence in a guy like Chambers, who can transfer what he did last year into this Arsenal squad this year. And I think the longer we go without some kind of massive fuck up on the back end, the greater confidence we can take from this and moving forward this year. So Those are kind of the three players I'm looking to look at, you know, looking to focus on this week.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if Emery goes with Chambers or Socrates. I imagine that David Luiz will have his visa issues sorted out, and will probably be, you know, the first center back on our first 11 this season. I imagine he'll get his debut this weekend, Chambers, you know, he's not a great passer, but I feel like our playing out from the back in particular would be a lot better with him and Luiz is at least being both good options, as opposed to Socrates, who just really cannot pass the ball. So, with the new goal kick routine, that's allowable this year, where you can, you know, play it inside of the box. It would be interesting to see how that works with, you know, actually talented players passing the ball, whereas, you know, last week we got ourselves into some trouble trying to do that and getting pressed. I mean, that's going to take some getting used to for attacking and defending teams alike, but that'll be interesting to see how he, yeah, I guess we'll get a peek of the pecking order this weekend to see, you know, who's number two. So I certainly would be interested in giving Chambers a shot at winning that role. Socrates has been, you know, fine, I think, but I think our best future is with somebody that's a little more technically capable.
See, it would be nice to be able to, I'm going back here to the situation here with who to start, Aubameyang, Lacazette, Pepe. Do you start all three? Do you start two of the three? The one nice thing about that is two of those three guys would be amazing pieces to bring on the last 20, 25 minutes of a match, to be able to run what are probably very tired legs into the ground. You know, you look at a guy like Aubameyang and a Pepe, those guys, if you just put them out in the flank and the way that Emery plays, it would seem very natural and very productive if you had that piece coming off the bench. So even if we can't get all three, which would be still very nice to have, you are left with a very good situation from having to manage maybe either trying to get a goal to break a tie or to get a come down from one and be able to knock in one, maybe two. It would be nice to have those pieces available to Emery. So I think it's kind of a win-win situation in that regard. But yeah, I think ultimately it would still be nice to be able to see all three out there at the same time working very well together.
I think you're right in terms of tactics, but certainly in terms of managing personalities, obviously I don't think any of those three guys is going to be happy if they're sort of a regular Correct. Or permanent substitute player. So, it's sort of the nice thing about having cup competitions and Europa League stuff is you can sort of rotate various people in and out and shift lineups around. But I do think that's going to be a challenge for Emery is to figure out sort of how to play all three of those guys, roughly the amount of playing time they expect to get, and sort of who plays what roles, who plays out wide, who gets to be the sort of the true upfront striker, or how they all fit into formation.
That's definitely the case. And we've got so many young players too that are still with the club that need playing time too. And I think that position in midfield, we've got probably, no matter what you think of Xhaka, we've got four starting quality center midfielders for two positions. And hopefully Emery figures out a rotation system, which is something that he did not do last season particularly effectively. Not something that Wenger ever did particularly effectively. So that will be interesting to see how that is managed throughout the season, because we should, keep some of those guys fresh and, try different things, both in the attacking and center midfield portion of the pitch. But there's a lot of guys that need minutes. That's something Emery definitely will need to improve on this season.
So do you have any predictions, score predictions for the match?
2-0 Arsenal.
I'll go 3-1 Arsenal.
Ooh. What do I need to do like prices right?
You got to go one over.
Yeah, I got to go one over. Let's do 4-1 Arsenal, I guess.
I do like how Marty was very quick with the 2-0. So that gives me extreme confidence because you're a pretty smart guy in general. So I'm just going to cling on to the hope of back-to-back clean sheets.
Hey, if Marty's right, I would love it because the clean sheets were so few and far between last season. To start off with two would be a certain step in the right direction.
Before we then concede six at Liverpool.
It's the average that counts, remember.
Exactly.
Right. It's that would be only two per game.
It's actually the median. It's the median that counts. So it's totally fine if Liverpool's an outlier.
That's true. What's the only other one? The mean? I can't, fuck math. That's why I went to law school.
Mode.
I'm an artist. I have no idea about math. Yeah.
I should know, but no. Awesome. All right. I think that's a good place to stop there. What do you guys think?